more food for thought. I'm going to hand you over to Alex from MEDAIR, who will tell us about their work with Syrian refugees.
Thank you, everyone. Welcome to the living room. Anyone else cold last night? Yeah, good. I'm glad I didn't suffer alone. My name is Alex. I work for MEDAIR. Just out of interest, who in the room has heard of MEDAIR? Hands up if you've heard of MEDAIR. Okay, great. About 50% maybe. So MEDAIR is a Christian humanitarian organization. We respond to natural disasters, conflict and chronic crisis and help affected communities survive through humanitarian relief and then support them in their recovery. Our heart as an organization is to reach the most vulnerable people. We help them in three key areas: health and nutrition, water, sanitation and hygiene, and shelter and infrastructure. We work in places like Afghanistan, South Sudan, Somalia, Haiti, DR Congo. And in each of the countries that we work in, we seek out those who need the help the most, and often they're people that no one else is reaching. One of the situations we're responding to is the crisis in Syria. The conflict in Syria has caused what has been described as the worst humanitarian crisis since the end of the Cold War. In a moment, I'm going to hand over to my colleague Alison, who works on our Syrian crisis program. She's fresh off the plane from Lebanon and will explain a bit about the crisis and what MEDAIR is doing to help refugees who have fled the conflict. But before Alison comes and shares with us, I want to explain briefly what we're hoping to do over the next hour or so. At the end of last year, I visited Lebanon and Jordan, had the pleasure of meeting some of the men, women and children from Syria who have been affected by this awful conflict. This is one of the people that I met when I was in Lebanon. His name is Ali. He's 7 years old. He received severe burns to his face when his house in Syria was bombed. His family fled to Lebanon, where they met MEDAIR's team, who provided them with shelter items, ensuring they had somewhere safe to stay. I would have loved to have taken you all with me so you could hear people like Ali's story firsthand. Unfortunately, MEDAIR's budget couldn't stretch to booking several hundred plane tickets. I'm sorry about that. But this afternoon, we're hoping to bring a little bit of the Middle East here to Northamptonshire. Today, you're going to hear four accounts of Syrians who MEDAIR are working with. The accounts are going to be delivered by actors, but they are all true stories of real people in real situations facing very real dilemmas. We wanted to highlight some of the difficult choices that many of the refugees have to make. Sometimes the wrong choice can have tragic consequences. When you came into the tent today, hopefully you would have received a card and a pen. And as you hear the stories, we want you to put yourselves in the place of each of the refugees. Each of the stories will be in two parts. At the end of part one, ask yourself what you would do in their situation. We'd love you to fill in the card, ticking what choice you would make. And in part two of the stories, you'll hear what the refugees themselves chose to do in the situation that they found themselves in. At the end of our time together, please hand the cards in on your way out. We'd love to keep in touch with you, tell you more about the refugees you've heard about this afternoon, and feedback how your choices compared to everyone else in the room. But please give a warm welcome to Alison, fresh from Lebanon, who's going to share briefly about the Syrian crisis and what MEDAIR is doing to support refugees.
Hi. As Alex has said, my name's Alison, and I'm currently working with MEDAIR in Lebanon on our Syrian crisis response programme. So it's helpful to have a bit of background to the conflict. As a reminder of where Syria is, it's actually not far. It's just the other side of the Mediterranean Sea, tucked between Turkey and Iraq, also bordering Jordan and Lebanon. It's not all hot and dusty. It's actually cold and snowy in winter. Syria was highly developed with good infrastructure, renowned universities, and a thriving tourist industry. In Lebanon, we shop at H&M, Accessorize, and Marks and Spencer. In Jordan, there's luxury hotels at the Dead Sea and incredible history at the city of Petra. So it sounds like an amazing region to live in. And it is, but the conflict in Syria is leaving millions of people's lives in this area ruined. So how did it start? Well, it's a complex region, and you only need to see the current news to see that. But in early 2011, small groups of teenagers wrote revolutionary slogans on the walls of their city. By March, large demonstrations had started in Damascus and Aleppo, and by the end of March, the government had responded violently on several occasions. Now, 3.5 years later, we've seen it gradually descend into full civil war. The opposition force is deeply divided and fractious, with terrorist groups taking advantage of this to infiltrate the fighting. More and more, we're seeing it affect the whole region as well. But if we look beyond the facts about the fighting, we see immense human cost. The UN Agency for Refugees, UNHCR, say there are currently 2,977,978 refugees from Syria. That's equivalent to the whole population of Wales being displaced. These refugees have fled into neighbouring countries, mostly Jordan, Lebanon, Turkey, and Iraq. More than half of these refugees are children. An estimated 11 million inside Syria are in need of aid. In Jordan, there are over 609,000 refugees. In Lebanon, officially, there are over 1,161,000 Syrian refugees seeking shelter. That means that in Lebanon, over 1 in 5 people in Lebanon are Syrian refugees. But again, we need to look beyond the numbers to understand the reality. In Lebanon, formal refugee camps are not permitted. Refugees therefore find other places to live, one of these being informal settlements. So as the name suggests, these are unplanned, ad hoc, unmanaged, tented settlements that are more often than not on private land, which is fit for nothing else. We're most of us camping this weekend, so please just imagine the following. Imagine when you left your home on Friday, you knew you weren't going back. Imagine when you carried your stuff for a few minutes, that was not minutes, that was hours or days. Imagine when you got here, you had to source some wood and vinyl to build your own tent. To fit your tent in the little space left on the site, you had to build it with less than 1 meter separating it from the next tent to it. There's no fire break. In your tent is now everything you own in the world, and living in it is probably not just your family, but cousins and grandparents too. There's no water stations. The water you use has to be fetched. There are no portaloos, only makeshift shacks over big holes in the ground, which eventually fill and are covered with thin bits of timber. And you'll be here all year, through autumn, winter, spring and summer, and through to next autumn. MEDER sent emergency response teams into both Lebanon and Jordan in autumn 2012, and the projects have grown in both countries to be one of MEDER's biggest programmes. So in Jordan, there are large refugee camps. Many of you might have seen images like this on TV. This is the largest refugee camp, Zatari. But many refugees choose to leave and end up living in towns and cities. Work is hard to come by because of their status as refugees. MEDER gives unconditional rent assistance to the most vulnerable of families so they know they'll have a roof over their heads. MEDER also works with families forced to live in garages and unfinished buildings where the rent may still be very high. Here, our teams install proper locking doors and windows, rewiring, sanitary facilities, and kitchen equipment. These projects restore the dignity of families as they can live in clean, safe spaces. MEDER has also become a sector leader in health and nutrition in Jordan. Malnutrition among refugee families is a big fear due to lack of access to good food and health care and bad feeding practices. MEDER employs community mobilisers to train mothers about the importance of breastfeeding, screens for malnutrition, and provides food for the malnourished, as well as communicating health messaging. MEDER has also assisted the UN in managing a large-scale health and nutrition assessment in Jordan. In Lebanon, we work first and foremost with those people living in informal settlements. We first started distributing non-food items and shelter materials to refugees to improve the condition of their shelters. This has formed the core of our work, and we still distribute shelter kits to newcomers who end up in these settlements, meaning they don't have to spend several hundred dollars finding materials to build themselves shelter. Last winter, we distributed blankets, stoves and fuel and material to help their insulation of the tents. We also distribute fire extinguishers and train communities in fire safety. As I mentioned, land used for settlements is not often suitable for anything else. We therefore try and do a kind of retrospective infrastructure, which is our site improvements. We dig drains, install soakaways for the grey water, arrange waste collection, build sandbag defence walls, and spread gravel to aid the access. As the settlements are informal, they're not officially located. So MEDER developed a system of mapping these settlements using simple GPS technology and smartphones, which has now been rolled out across the whole of Lebanon. We give each settlement a unique identifying number, or a P code. That allows coordination between agencies, so we all know what site we're talking about. It's a bit like the junction numbers on the campsite, rather than just saying, my tent's next to the tree. It allows simple simplified referrals, gap mapping, and targeted assistance. It also allows better tracking of how many refugees are living in how many settlements. We've recently got funding for a water, sanitation, and hygiene project where we've started distributing basic hygiene kits, circulating hygiene messages, and supporting local authorities for water distribution. And in health, Medair in Lebanon is supporting 3 local primary healthcare centres. We have worked with them to improve the centres themselves, supplied medicines and equipment, and are supporting the staff in assisting Syrians and Lebanese. So, I'm sure you can see that our work is varied and valuable. The thing that is clear to me every single day as I work is that while the situation is immensely complicated, the needs are very, very simple. And with other crises in the world rightfully getting media attention, we're concerned that the world should not forget. But now, let's hear their stories. Please remember to mark down what choice you would make on the card at the end of each of the first parts of the stories. I'm just going to explain a little to the background to each story you're going to hear, and that's also on the flyer on your, that you were given. Okay, so first we've got Abu Omar, and he's fled Syria into neighbouring Jordan with his family. All refugees who enter Jordan are picked up on the border and taken to Zaatari refugee camp. This refugee camp holds 140,000 people and is now Jordan's 4th largest city. If refugees choose to leave the camp, they are not allowed back in. We've got Bayan. Bayan is in Syria. She has taken refugee in their home with their sister Zaina and their children whilst the conflict rages around them. Bayan and Zaina's husbands are both missing. Leaving Syria is extremely dangerous and can sometimes take weeks or even months. Hassan used to be an electrician, but fled Syria with his wife and 2 severely disabled sons. They have been in Jordan for a while now, and Hassan isn't able to work formally in Jordan. They have sold most of their possessions and are struggling to buy even the most basic necessities for their sons. Wada lives in a field in Lebanon in a poorly constructed tent with 7 of her children. Her husband and eldest son stayed behind in Syria to look after their home, but Wada hasn't heard from them for a while. Her tent is so poorly constructed that it's severely exposed to the weather. Now, please enjoy the voices from Syria.
A rocket took off my neighbor's head. I thought this was a good enough sign that we should leave. And after, the soldiers started coming to the villages and killing people with knives. Can you believe people will do this to one another? I thought it was time to pack up my wife and 5 children and get the hell out before another building collapsed, this time right on top of us. There are only so many times you can tell your children to imagine that the planes flying over are large, magnificent birds that just happen to be very noisy. There are only so many times you can imagine that for yourself. So, khalas, we left. That aid worker there told me there is something like 6 million of us displaced from our homeland. Displaced. That's a nice way to look at it. Displaced is our little bit of heaven has been turned into hell. So we displaced ourselves and came to this lovely Jordanian Eden of Camp Zaatari. Who knew Eden was full of tin walls and dirty water? From hell to hell. You would think that so many people who have been through the same nightmare would come together as one strong family and support each other. But shoving thousands of desperate people in a tiny space turns them into animals who only care about survival. At least in my home, I never had to sleep with a knife under my pillow. Running from shelling was easier. You knew when it was coming. I never knew you could see air. But you can hear, you know? You can see how thick the air is. You can feel it in your body like a weight. And every time you try to breathe, it gets harder to breathe. There are so many sick people here. We could keep aspirin companies rich for all of their lives and their great-grandchildren's lives. They can live off my daughter's sickness. So, Mr. Aid Worker, Afendi said, what do you think, Should I stay in the camp or go before the cats start to look at me like very large mice? How much more of the sick children, no food, dirty water, small houses should we put up with? Is the risk outside better than the risk in here?
After 2 years, I can still feel each bone inside my soul. Just breathe, Yvonne. Breathe. Olive trees, pressing oil, labna. Smell the sour, smell the sweet. Smell the sheep after the rain. Smell goats with full udders. Feel the sun, feel the land. Feel the earth under your feet. Smell your husband. Even you could sleep through this, Habibi. I wish I was like you. I wish I could dream right now. But it's so hot. Oh, and I am so tired. Oh, I'm so tired of being tired. I just want to sleep. But it's just me waiting until the silence decides whether it should come back or not. It's always me waiting. Oh! Oh, God! That sounded like it came from next door! Oh, my God! How much more can there be left for them to hit after 2 years? How can they still find things to be angry at after 2 years? How can they not feel the pain of destroying something so beautiful? Oh, forgive them. Ya Allah, for destroying such a beautiful country. You did not make us perfect. We do not have the same patience as you do. Oh, God, Ya Allah! That sounded too close. What are we to do? What is your destiny for us? Are we to die here? Will you let us go? Can we go so I can sleep again? I can't do this anymore. I cannot do it. What will be left of us? What will be left of the garden you left us? What will be left of me? What do I do?
Hold? You want me to hold you? Toilet. You need toilet? Pain. Do you feel pain? Ya Allah, Ahmed, please be calm and tell me what you need. Food. You want food? Maybe when your mother comes back, she'll have food. Maybe some bread, some meat if she's lucky. I know you're hungry. I know. But you need medicine, Habibi. So today is medicine, and maybe tomorrow some cheese. We'll buy your favorite. You know, you are lucky that you are smaller than your brother. No, it's true. If you and Lohan were bigger, how would we have carried you from the desert border all the way over here? I'm strong, Ya Ibni. But 5 hours is 5 hours. And even the strongest man would collapse. But you were like
like paper in my arms, like carrying a basket of wind. Some days I look into your eyes and I think maybe I was wrong. Some days I wonder if maybe it would have been better if I would have for us to stay and die. Maybe I should have sent you and Lohan to God so you could be free of pain again. Where you can, God would make your body normal so you can run and play with everyone. Maybe I should have just taken a pillow while you slept and... God, forgive me. Forgive me, son. Your father is just sad. He only wants what's best for you. Tomorrow, you are as you are, okay? We deal with what God has given us because there is always a reason. You are as you are, just as I am as I am, with no difference between the two. So tomorrow, today I will take the medicine. We both will take the medicine. And tomorrow, in the morning, we'll decide whether we want medicine or food. Which we want more. We'll decide together, yes. How does that sound?
I wonder if this is what it was like for Noah. The rain never stops. Water crawling in from everywhere, soaking into everything. Oh. Behafia rain. How can you fill a small tent like this? Oh. I think I'm going to need a back rub from all this bending. And straightening and throwing. And bending and straightening and throwing. God made men for times like this. Yalla, I hope you are keeping your end of the bargain and keeping him straight. Oh, keep him safe. Silly man. Silly, silly man. What the hell did you need to stay behind for? Persistent and stubborn from the very first day. 13. What man proposes to a 13-year-old girl as she tries to comfort her father after his surgery? You were bleeding from the shoulder, and all you could think about was marrying this girl. Silly man. My poor father. Trapped in that room with you for weeks, you talked his ear off. Not even pulling the curtain closed could stop you talking. I thought I wish I'd bought some sleeping tablets just to get some peace and quiet. You silly, silly, stubborn man. I didn't think you would wait. I thought you would get tired. Maybe that is why I'm being punished now. Made to wait for you. Fair trade. I was 15 when you got your way. How old will I be when I get mine? And you and our son are back together with the rest of us. Pull us out of all this. To hold me. And keep me. Nobody thought we would last. You remember that, Habibi? If you don't give him children, he will leave you.
Men need children to keep them honest.
Give him children before his eyes wander.
2 years to marry me, and I don't think you'll wait as long, longer, to have children. I have to admit, Habibi, I was surprised you waited 5 years. I was scared, don't you worry. It's not as if we didn't try, your love. You remember that remedy the widow Alia gave us? God, what a smell! I don't want to think about what she put into it, but all it did was make us bare. You were jumping around like ants were biting you. And the neighbors, they thought I took to beating you. But God, he rewards those who are patient in his kingdom. Little Korea. Our little impossible possibility. And then the gates were open. 10 of us! 10! My God, what were we thinking? A simple couple, growing simple cotton, with 8 not-so-simple children, in a small, simple mud house. A castle compared to this. A beautiful castle. Our castle. Oh, God, when I wished for a house on the ocean, I wish I'd been a bit more specific. Oh. But right now, what I really, really would appreciate is a break to stop my arms from burning so that my children can come in here and stop feeling wet and shivering. Having to wait out there. But stop making them wait. I've done enough waiting for all of them. Stop making them wait. Stop making me wait. Stop making it rain. Stop making all this water. Stop making me suffer. Stop making me dream. Stop making me wish for things I can no longer have. Oh, I lost what happened. You're wasting your time, Habibi. This water is not going anywhere. And neither am I. None of us are. Just keep working, Habibi. Look at what it did for Noah. He discovered a mountain at the end of it. 2 by 2. That was the rule, wasn't it? Yes. 2 by 2. And so again, 2 by 2. Here. It will happen. You just have to keep waiting, Wanda. Keep waiting for that silly man. Or maybe we should just leave the tent. God, give me a sign. But it doesn't have to be a dove. What would you have me do? But leave the tent? Stay in the tent. Should I leave? Or go find a mountain of my own. Let me know.
Maybe 3 months wasn't enough. But the point of escaping is to go to something better. No food, no clean water. People go into the bathroom wherever they please. I watched my children get thinner and grayer, and their voices dry from thirst, and their clothes dirty and full of holes. Long lines, people shoving one another, excuses to the right, excuses to the left. There was no justice in Zaatari. Only the strong were helped, and the rest of us needed to die quicker. In order to make room for other strong people. God helped the weak ones, even if they were so much to sneeze. And those people, those tricky aid workers, do you know what they said to me? They said, wait for this. Abu Omar, they couldn't even say my name right, Abu Omar. We are all so sorry, but if you leave now, you cannot come back and forfeit all the help we can give you. Excuse me, I said I was not happy. You're telling me I can't go for a walk?
or find a job to support my family or take them somewhere safer without being given no more help. Is that what you're telling me? Yes, I'm afraid so. Afraid? What the hell did he have to be afraid of? If you go, you will not be let back in. So Tilhas Habibi, I packed my wife and children and again we displaced ourselves. I can see you're getting bored. I'm almost done. I know these interviews are supposed to be short, but you're here and I'm here and you've asked me a question and you don't ask an Arab man a question without getting a long story. We're colorful that way. And we make you search for the answer. So they mean something. Maybe that's our problem. Too busy searching, no focus on finding. We're also philosophers. Anyway, we traded in our tent in the pit of hell for a tent outside the pit of hell. What? We're going to raise our children in such madness. Despite what other countries might think, we are civilized people. Our wants and needs are no different. So what if we speak a different tongue? We have the same hearts that beat the same way. But people don't like to think they are equal to us. Truthfully, I think the rest of Jordan is no different to the camp. No work. Everything is expensive, ya baby. People know our situation and they accept us, but they always keep one eye on us. You know the police, they come to me and ordered me to change the materials on the outside of my tent to make it look different. I can't even buy meat or bread for my 5 children and I have to find 200 dinar from where I don't know just for the privilege of setting up my own tent. Is there anything lower than hell? So now I am in debt and I have no way to repay my debt and my children are too young to help. And any day now, tomorrow from all I know, desperation is going to set in. But let me tell you one more important thing you should never forget about Syrians, about any Arab worth their weight in water. No matter what is ruined, our home, our garden, our family, our bodies, our country, no matter what, we can rebuild it. We will rebuild it. So, the end, no more to the story. What do you think? Can you give us the help we need? Or should I just go and displace myself somewhere else?
There are no more bombs. Hear the silence. Fire. There you go. There you go. Don't wake the children. Wake the children. Oh, wake them, ya Bayan, wake. You saw to that God took away sound from Muhammad and Rabia, took back some of Aliyah's fingers, and Abu Rahmani has no strength. He can barely keep his legs underneath him. Maybe you needed all these things back for a while. Did you also need my sister's husband? Did you need mine? When can we have them back? I've tried not to question you. I've tried not to question the destiny you have in store for me, or them, or my children, but why us? Ya Allah? Why pick us? Is it because we left? Maybe I read the signs wrong. You took pieces from my children. You took Zaina's husband. You took mine. You didn't tell us where they are. You won't let us have any hope. What is your destiny for them? So I thought you wanted us to leave. Was this wrong? Was it wrong to come to this apartment in a land that is not ours? Look how we suffer for you. No heat. We all sleep in one room. Everyone prays to you all the time. Mustafa works all day and night for money that can barely pay for food. He should enjoy being a child and not doing the work of a husband. Yes, yes, we are safe. And we thank you, Ya Allah. But look at the fear. Look at the children who are turning into ghosts. Their hair going white. Their souls too afraid to live. They don't know they are still alive. Oh, did you want us to die? Maybe that is why you are so angry. Should we come to you now? Huh? Just tell me something. Show me any sign. Or just let me sleep. Let me dream of the olive trees dancing in the wind. Slick juices running between my fingers. The smooth tan of labna on warm bread. And my husband holding my waist. And my sister and her children playing in the yard as her husband watches them proudly. And my children who can hear the breezes. Feel the earth. And watch the sun rise and set. This is not life we are living. This is not even death. But at least we are alive. For as long as you'll give us. For as long as you will give us. You see? See, dear invisible, not present husband, look! Dry as sand, drier even. I see you like our new tent. Vinyl, they call it. Genius, I call it. But it would still be nice to have you with us to carry our belongings to our new location. You are taking your time. I get it. Don't worry. You're paying me back for making you wait. Just you wait till I get my hands on you. You like the nice stones here? Those aid workers. They gave them to us. Our little Huria wants to borrow some and make a garden. But I'm not sure I should let her. You plant a seed, it takes root, and then you can never leave it. But maybe a flower or two. They make her smile. I hope you are keeping our house clean. And don't forget to weed the fields.
And don't make our son do all the work, you lazy man. Don't think about the hours. Not the minutes, not the seconds. Lose count of the number of times the sun rises and falls. It has worked for me. Patience, right, Habibi? We're experts at it now. Only I'm a little bit better than you, of course. I miss our home. I know this is not the same. It's not paradise, I know. Our little mud house, that is paradise. That is still my castle. And you are still my prince. But now I have found a mountain that is waiting here for you. I am waiting here for you in our vinyl castle. Imshi, ya Afrit, get your face over here. Get over here soon.
So, son, it's a new day and a new choice ahead of you. So which is it going to be? Medicine or food? You get to choose which one you're going to have first. This? Okay. Lumpy nut it is. You know, soon I'm going to start calling you Plumpy Nut. Even Plumpy Nut. Your mother, she's a hero, isn't she, son? She bring these nice people to look at you. And now look at you. Look at you! Look at your brother. No. You eat it all. We all have our own backs now. We'll eat like kings. Like lumpy nut kings. And tomorrow, you will walk. Of course. Anything is possible, isn't it? It is. What is it, son? I want to go home too. God willing, there will be an end. I hope there is an end. And you must hope for something too. But don't tell me. You keep it a secret. Let the hope grow so that when it is released, you will float. You will be lighter even than air. Not even angels will float higher than you. Not even angels. And that will feel nice. Yes, nice. But until then, let's call this hope, okay?
Thank you, guys. That was so powerful. Josh, Waji, Sadiqa, and Nadia, thank you so much. That was amazing. And Christian and Savan. Christian directed it, and Savan wrote the script standing at the back there. Thank you so much, guys. That was really powerful. We've got about 10-15 minutes left, which we earmarked for a bit of question and answer. So Alison's going to come up. And if anyone's got any questions about the kind of Syrian refugee crisis, the current situation, we'd love to hear your questions. Anyone got any burning questions? Wow, Greenbelt, you surprised me. Okay, here we go. Where does MedEd get the funding from? That's a great question. Do you want to take that one, Alison?
In Lebanon and Jordan, we get a lot of funding from ECHO, which is the European Union Humanitarian Aid organisation. We get quite a bit from the UN as well, UNHCR. And then there's some from private funding as well. And I think, yeah, the UK office do a lot to raise a lot of that private funding. And then other kind of governmental bodies as well. So it's quite varied. But mostly in Lebanon and Jordan, it's ECHO and UNHCR.
Any more questions? And elsewhere across the organisation. So that's probably, so the question was, where in other countries, where do we get our funding from? The model is very similar in other countries. So we get a lot of money from government donors, so like the US government, the European Union. We get a bit from the UK government, from DFID, but also a lot from, you know, people like you and I giving £5-10 a month. So it's a mix, but a lot from government donors. Yes. What are the dangers for refugees who are leaving Syria? Do you want to take that one, Alison?
I'll do my best. I think physically, like the act of leaving Syria, I think it's difficult to get out. There's a lot of, I think, armed groups that makes it difficult for people to leave. Physically getting out of some cities, people just can't leave in some of the cities. And then when you get over the border into Lebanon and Jordan, I think it's more kind of, I'm just trying to think the best way to answer it. I think it's more dangers of just where you, I mean, you heard the stories, like where you pitch your tent and where to go, or what shelter to find, or there's several options, but it's which is the best one, and then where you get the medical care from, and so I guess those are the dangers. I don't know if that's a great answer. Do you want
to? Yeah, I'll just add to that. I mean, I was only in Lebanon and Jordan for a couple of weeks at the end of last year, so I'm by no means an expert, but for a lot of the refugees that I met, when they decided that they were going to leave Syria, it was a matter of months sometimes that they decided they were going to leave their hometown, move to somewhere else that was safe and where there was no conflict, and then conflict would erupt there, so they'd move somewhere else. So sometimes it's a process of months, even up to a year, of moving around Syria before they finally decide, okay, I'm going to leave now. So that in itself, moving your family in transit, I mean, that's dangerous in itself. Yeah. Okay, so the question, if you couldn't hear, was we're dealing with the physical needs, but we're also dealing with a lot of traumatized children. So how might we deal with that? Do you want to take that one, Alison?
As we mentioned, MEDA has three core areas, that's shelter and then water, sanitation and hygiene and health. So we don't have kind of psychological expertise within the agency, but a lot of what we on the field are doing every day is coordinating with other organisations. So in the field, in both Lebanon and Jordan, there's a lot of interaction between us and many other organisations, all of which have different specialities. So we have referral procedures and stuff which we refer people on to other organisations. I know Save the Children do a lot of that, and the IRC do a lot of that as well. So very day-to-day meeting with other people.
If I could just add something onto that as well. As an organisation, we have six values: compassion, hope, accountability, dignity, and integrity, and faith. And from when I was in Lebanon speaking with one of Alison's colleagues, I think in emergency situations, it can be so easy to slip into seeing people as just numbers and a certain number of people that you have to kind of meet the needs of. But actually taking time and treating people as human beings, I mean, I know it sounds obvious, but it actually can be really easily forgotten. So one of Alison's colleagues was telling me about a day that they had to go in and do an assessment, and they had a certain number of these informal settlements to cover. And that was a big stretch to do that in a day. But and everyone you meet wants to just sit down and drink tea with you and tell you their stories. And it's really important, just the kind of things like that, to actually engage with people as humans and have conversation and, you know, reassure them that you're there to support. That's part of the I guess the values that MEDA tries to bring.
I just thought, in the office where we work, maybe a year ago when we first moved in, there were a few kids that were refugees living in the same building, and they used to kind of it was really hard. They used to shoot us with sticks and hide behind cars. You just think, what have they seen? But we would just give them a smile and a wave and things. And actually, through like, I think Alex is like using those values, and we've seen them now be happy kids, and we now wave at them, and they wave back at us, and we play football with them. So I guess it's just time and just remembering that people are human, and just to kind of smile at them and play with them when you can. And that's, we've really seen that as a real difference.
Any more questions? Yeah.
I just think that a lot of women and children leave and the husbands stay, mm-hmm. or the older boys stay. It might be a stupid question, but why is that? Why do the men stay?
Yeah, so the question was, a lot of women and children flee, but the men decide to leave behind. Why do they leave behind? Why do they stay behind? I think a mix of reasons, like we heard in one of the stories, just sometimes they decide because they're proud of their home and they want to protect their home. Sometimes it's other reasons. I don't know if you want to add anything more to that. Yeah, I it's hard to say, but there's, I think, a mix of reasons. Yeah. Yeah.
There's a long-term situation, obviously, still to talk about, but is there anything you can replace to settle elsewhere, or any plans to help people settle back into, obviously?
Yeah, so that's a great question. Thank you. The question was, for the longer term, are there any plans in place to help kind of people resettle more permanently? Is that, yeah. Do you want to take that? Okay, thanks. I mean, I think in Alison can share a bit more about Lebanon, but you know, the whole policy around not having a formal refugee camp is because the Lebanese government is very hesitant to see this as a permanent solution. I mean, it would take a much more intelligent man than me, a man or woman than me, to kind of imagine a long-term solution for this crisis, because it's 3 years now. There's no end in sight. So I think in terms of a long-term solution, it's really, really, really difficult.
In terms of Medair's approach to that as well, I know early on, so we designed these shelter kits, which are the vinyl and the timber that we give refugees to improve the quality of their tents. And I know early on when, you know, it might have been 6 months, it might have been a year for how long the conflict was going to go on for, they were designed with the idea that they could be taken back and used kind of as temporary solutions to help people until they could get their feet back on the ground. So we really do have a kind of long-term view as to what we'll do when, that's always part of our strategy, what we'll do when we can get back in. And we're not in Syria, but we would love to be. And I think as soon as the situation is able for us to do that, then I think Medair will try and get in and try and help people resettle where we can. So, yeah.
Got a few more questions, so I'll just take it at the back there.
That's Keswick this year. There was 3 weeks of prayer in Syria, and they mentioned that there's large numbers going to the northern territories where there's mountains, being surrounded by the militia, and the water being scarce because people blowing up the pumps and the wells. Mm-hmm. Is there any way of getting aid to them?
So, yeah, for those of you who didn't hear, there was questions about people being displaced to the north of Syria and water sources being destroyed. Is there any way to get help to them? Do you want to take that? It's quite difficult for us to answer that because we're not operating inside Syria. I know there are several organisations who are, and I'm sure they're doing what they can to help. At the moment, I can only speak for Medair, and we're not operating inside Syria at the moment. So that's, I guess, sorry to defer that one, but it's a difficult one to answer. Sorry. Yeah, in the middle here.
Sort of going a little bit back to the long term solution. Obviously, the work that you guys do as humanitarians and kind of dealing with the aftermath of stuff that's already happened. How do you personally grapple with trying to politically resolve stuff? You know, those who are trying to lobby or trying to get involved in actually sorting out the mess, if it can be sorted out. Do you choose not to engage and just focus on the task in hand? Or
yeah, that's a great question. Did everyone hear that? Yeah? Did everyone hear that? Medair as an organization just focuses on our kind of whole mission is about meeting the needs of the most vulnerable. And so we don't engage in advocacy work because we feel as though, firstly, it's not really our skill set, but also if we were to engage in kind of lobbying, that it might affect our ability to meet the needs of those people. So we as an organization don't involve ourselves with kind of lobbying governments We kind of do informally in that a lot of our funding comes from government, so we have relationships and we're able to feedback what we're seeing on the ground to affect perhaps where large chunks of money are being kind of distributed, and we can feedback where we see the needs. But in terms of kind of resolving the kind of political situation in Syria, we choose not to engage ourselves in there, but there are lots of great organizations who are. So does that answer your question?
I guess maybe you prefer not to answer, but I suppose I was wondering, on a personal level, for people who work at MEDA, how do you do that within yourself? I guess I'm trying to imagine, for part of me, I'd be wanting to do stuff that's very vulnerable, but I'd also be so angry that, you know, when more are arriving.
Absolutely. I mean, I can speak from my couple of weeks there. I think naively, I went in thinking this is a war of a people against its government, but it's so much more complicated than that. There's over 1,000 different rebel groups as part of that opposition who all have very different visions of what they want Syria to be. And, you know, from sitting down and drinking tea with Syrians, they say that both sides are as bad as each other. So in terms of, for me personally, this is kind of a personal thing, it's kind of hard to know what to lobby for, you know. It's such a complicated situation. I think we've probably got time for one more question at the back. Yeah.
Sorry,
not at all.
Could you tell us a little bit more about the actors?
Yeah. They're looking for work. They're available. Very competitive rates. Guys, do you want to just share briefly who you are and what you do?
I'm Nadia, and I've got North African heritage. I used to live out in Libya for the first 9 years, and then I grew up in England.
I'm Josh. I'm actually from Jewish heritage, and I'm from Northwest London.
I think probably that's all we've got time for. Can we once again thank our amazing actors and support team.